AgriTalk is brought to you by Full Scale from Helena. Grow strong returns this season with breakthrough foliar nutrition from Full Scale at Reproduction. And by propane. Propane is the energy for everyone, especially farmers. Environmentally friendly propane can fuel most anything on the farm. See how at propane.com. The cattle market is on fire. The beef market is red hot. We are going to spend some time figuring out the potential of the market, and we will identify the risk and what you should do about it. The grains were all over the place, with beans lower, wheat higher, and corn nearly unchanged.
Live from the last official day of official calendar winter, via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This afternoon, it's a conversation with Chris Swift from Swift Trading, and later, Kerry Artak from ArtakAdvisory.com. Directly following the news, Jack Scofield from the Price Futures Group. I'm handsome newsman Davis Michelson, and now, here's the host of AgriTalk, Chip Lowry.
It's kind of weird, isn't it? Spring's here just in time for it to get cold.
That's right. That's right. Normally, we see the first day of spring on the 21st of March. This year, it comes on the 19th.
Yeah.
I don't want to get too technical for you here. It's because of the equinox is what it is. The
well,
equinox.
Yeah. Exactly.
That's why it's the 19th instead of the 21st.
Is it?
I guess.
It's probably got a leap year influence there.
It might. I don't know. Yeah. The internet really is unclear. And if the internet doesn't know, I don't think it can be known. So there we are.
Gotcha.
But I'm looking welcome. Forward to it.
Yeah. Welcome to AgriTalk. I'm Chip. That is Davis. We are going to spend a little bit of time talking, quite a bit of time, talking about this cattle market because, doggone, this thing is about as hot as it's ever been. Mm-hmm. We're not up and making new highs, new all-time highs yet. But you take a look at those back month contracts, and if we're not making highs, we're getting awfully close. Mm-hmm. The amount of risk that travels up and down the road in a cattle hauler now, Davis, is just it's unbelievable. I saw a tweet the other day, and guys, thanks for tagging me in it. I don't have it in front of me, but it's going to be close enough to write.
Give us the gist.
When you got a semi going down the road loaded with fat cattle, it's worth as much as the corn in a 50,000 bushel bin.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah.
Precious
Think
cargo.
About that, fellas. Yeah. Yeah. The amount of risk is unbelievable. It's not unmanageable, but the amount of risk that's in this cattle market right now is pretty incredible. So we're going to talk about managing it. If you're not going to be proactive in managing the risk that's in cattle, I don't know when you would be. And we'll go over that with Chris Swift from Swift Trading Company.
Awesome.
Okay, buddy, you ready? Let's get started with markets.
I think let's do. Let's start with May soft red winter wheat futures, which opened higher and then slipped back to test support at Friday's close and then rallied to finish the day above Friday's high and above the pivotal 540 level. May hard red winter wheat futures also posted a low range open and a high range close, but stayed below the pivotal 580 level. The trend in temperatures to below normal in the upper Midwest supported wheat prices as crop watchers fret over the potential freeze damage. Prices were also supported by Russia's attacks on Ukrainian export facilities in Odessa. Export inspections of U.S. wheat in the weekend of March 14 totaled just over 302,000 metric tons in chip. That was at the low end of trade expectations. July HRW wheat futures today 7¾ cents higher, 567.5. July SRW wheat up 13.5 cents to 557.5. July spring wheat closed at 657¾. That's up 4¼ cents today.
Headlines out of Ukraine are positive again and catching the market's attention. So pay attention to those.
Well, export inspections of corn in the weekend of March 14 totaled nearly 1.24 million metric tons. That was at the high end of trade expectations. Spillover support from wheat futures helped corn prices hang close to unchanged, even with bean futures falling to dime plus losses. Headlines out of Ukraine also encouraged short covering in corn today. May corn futures posted a mid-range open, closed just below the opening range. Support in front month corn is at Friday's low of 431 and three quarters with resistance at 440. May corn futures were 0.75 cents lower at 436 today. July corn down a quarter of a penny, 448 and three quarters. December corn futures closed at 470 and three quarters, unchanged on the day. Fractionally impressed with corn today, Chip.
Yeah, fractionally impressed. Buyers are losing interest at 440 in that May contract. There's no question. So it has become serious resistance.
Well, May soybean futures opened to slightly higher and spiked resistance at $12 before falling back to close on session lows. Soybean meal futures helped to limit pressure on beans early in the session, but when meal prices fell to new session lows, beans were quick to follow to the downside. Export inspections of soybeans weekended March 14, 686,000 metric tons, in line with trade expectations. Bean harvest in Brazil has reached nearly two-thirds complete, according to Brazilian consulting firm Ag Rural. May beans 10.5 lower, 1187 and three quarters. July beans down 10 and a quarter, 1202 and one quarter. November beans closed at 1180 and one half. That's down 10 and a quarter cents, Chip.
Two-thirds complete with the bean harvest down there, and there's still quite a bit of the Brazilian bean crop that needs to be hedged in the U.S. market. So that's got me a little nervous.
Well, July cotton was up 67 points today to 94.26. On your livestock's heavyweight choice graded box beef prices jumped $1.43 this morning to $3.1333. Select boxes were up $1.40 to $3.0380. Movement was slow at just 43 loads this morning. April fat cattle at 132.5 higher, 188.57.5. April feeders $2.97.5 higher, 255.10. And April lean hog futures were a dime lower, 86.82.5. The June contract up 55, 103.02.5. Chip Flory.
All right. Thank you very much, Davis. Let's bring in Jack Scoville, Price Futures Group. Good afternoon, Jack. How you doing, buddy?
I'm doing good. How about yourself?
Well,
I'm trying to stay warm here today.
No kidding. The sun's shining. It looks beautiful. But the problem is it's a little chilly out there, no doubt, no doubt. So what do you – grains were all over the place today. Talk about, markets looking for direction. What happened?
Well, we are looking for direction, and I think, different markets, different fundamentals. You kind of highlighted what was going on in the wheat market pretty well. Good reason for wheat to be higher, and that was only wheat. And didn't spill over to corn too terribly much, although corn was a little firmer over the course of the day as well. But really didn't have much in the way of news. And then soybeans, we started picking up news that big sales of soybeans from producers down in Brazil.
Okay.
That had just coming up here, so the soybeans went a little lower. So you had differing fundamentals for different markets and reacting to those fundamentals, I think.
Yeah. That Brazilian bean crop, like we mentioned in the news, we've been waiting for for the Brazilian crop to be hedged here in the U.S. market, and it's just been really slow to develop, hasn't it, Jack?
Yeah, but it looks like finally some of it started to move. A little pop in the futures here. Popping the basis down there seems to be doing the trick and creating some sales. There's still going to be a lot more to go, as you know, but at least we got some of it out of the way, and hopefully we can get the rest of it out of the way without too much damage to the charts.
Gotcha. I hope that's the case as well. All right, Jack. Thanks, buddy. We'll talk to you next week.
Sounds great. Thank you.
You bet. Jack Scoville, Price Futures Group. Okay, as we were talking about at the start of the show, huge levels of risk in the cattle trade right now. What do we need to do to manage that? We'll talk with Chris Swift next.
To produce higher yields and greater value at harvest, timing is everything. Full Scale from Helena helps soybeans reach their full potential with breakthrough foliar nutrition and reproduction. Full Scale delivers beneficial plant extracts and micronutrients with the added efficiency of ENC formulation technology. It gives your soybeans every opportunity to grow strong returns this season. Contact your local ag retailer or Helena representative to learn more about Full Scale. Always read and follow label instructions and check registration status before use.
From powering irrigation engines to warming buildings, propane has always been a part of American farm life. Now, you can be a part of propane's future and save money at the same time. The Propane Farm Incentive Program is a research initiative that provides farmers up to $5,000 towards the purchase of new propane-powered equipment. In exchange, participants share performance data to make tomorrow's ag operations more cost-effective, more efficient, and more environmentally friendly with propane. Getting started is simple. Visit propane.com/farm incentive to see if you're eligible.
In the morning, you're coffeeed up and you're thinking. In the afternoon, you've calmed down, but you're still thinking. We're here all day. AgriTalk.
Davis, it was our buddy Scott Barley that posted that tweet.
From KKV.
From KKV Trading. He says, and I didn't have it right, so I'm going to read it exactly as Scott's got it.
Ooh, an official AgriTalk correction.
Yes, he says, okay. It is wild that a semi-load of feeders, so it's not fats, a semi-load of feeders are worth the same as a 50,000 bushel bin full of corn. Mm. You are exactly right. That is wild, no doubt about it. That's the amount of risk that's rolling up and down the roads out there for in the cattle industry right now, and it's risk that deserves to be managed. So we're going to talk about that today. Chris Swift, Swift Trading Company, is our guest. Chris, it's great to talk with you again, buddy. How you doing?
Oh, Chip, always a pleasure here, sir, too. I'm doing fantastic.
Good, good, good. You know, we've been here before. We've been here before on the amount of, you know, what these calves are worth. You know what? I don't know if we have been here before when you look at the feeder cattle market and what the cash feeders are worth, Chris. It feels like we're seeing some new all-time highs in the cash, aren't we?
Well, we are, and we have good reason to. We've got a goal to achieve. The industry is very, very slack of beef cattle. And so what do? We have to ration those cattle. If we're going to ration them, we got to produce an agenda that's going to hold them out for as long as possible to keep the price of beef from going out and crushing consumer demand. So over the last probably year and a half, we've started to begin to see this agenda form up to today where it has become literally solidified. And some of the things that we're doing out there to produce this agenda is growing what we have bigger. That's the first thing. We see our carcass weights growing out there. And we know that by doing that, we're going to accomplish more beef per cow out there. And then we're going to slow down the slaughter pace, give those cattle a little bit of time to put that weight on. And by holding back them, what do? We raise the price of box beef. You mentioned it today, $313 a pound. That's a new historical high if you take out the two Black Swans events of the Holcomb County fire and the 2020 COVID ordeal. Okay. Take those two out and you're at new highs. You're at new highs for stockers. You're at new highs for calves in some areas there. You haven't quite made it in the feeder cattle market, although there are some that have traded way above the feeder cattle index. But the feeder cattle index currently right now, a little over $3 from equaling last year's all-time high.
Okay.
So the next thing we're going to do, we're going to increase imports. We're going to bring beef in from other countries. We started that about this time last year when we opened up the new line from Paraguay. Australia, although not using the U.S. as a dumping ground, has lots of meat and lamb to push to the United States, them and New Zealand both, and we are large contributors, receivers of that. Okay. And then last, we're going to decrease our exports. We have really high-priced product out there. We're the only nation in the world that sells high-quality, grain-fed beef, and the price of it is close to three times higher than what most any other product in another country could be. So we're going to do that. And then last but not least, we're going to try to find another alternative source. We're going to continue with this dairy-beef cross, and although simmering slowly in the background, it's fixing to be ready in probably about another 12 to 18 months. We'll start to see elevated numbers of these dairy Angus cow mix or dairy, whatever beef cow that they have bred that bull with there, they'll have that mix. So that's what we're doing. We're seeing that. And then I'll wrap it up with one of the largest transfers of risk that I have seen in years, maybe since 2014. And that being, we have elevated sales of stockers and feeders and calves that we haven't seen in several years. Just about every week we're higher year over year, and sometimes 2 and 3 years out. So okay, here we are with fewer total numbers out there, but yet our sales volume is elevated. So to me, that says that there are some individuals deciding to exit the business. And when this all comes out to the very end, I think you'll see a whole lot fewer producers producing a whole lot more cattle.
Wow. Okay.
That's what I think.
In summary, that is what this is a different angle than what we normally talk about. Normally, we talk about maintaining demand, Chris. What you are talking about is what we rely on markets to do. And that is rationing demand. So you're talking about rationing demand for calves. You're talking about rationing demand for beef. These are happenings that take place in a normal functioning market, right?
Absolutely. There's not a cattleman out there that wants to see the consumer turn away from the meat shell. I can't afford that. That would break the cattleman's heart because of how hard he's had to work to put that product on that store shelf. And if that consumer can't afford it, neither one of them went. He's put a lot of hard work in there for a product that the consumer can't afford. So you mentioned that risk several times, and there's a multitude of those risks layered out through there. But the biggest thing to remember when you discuss risk like that is being able to live with the consequences of your marketing decisions.
Yeah.
That's what it's all about. Hindsight's 20/20 for you, me, and everybody else out there. But that's not what we live in. We live in a very cloudy future out there for which there are multiple different factors can upset the price, upset the delivery, upset all different kinds of production and manufacturing of it. And yet we sit here, and the one thing that we know we don't want to do, and that's lose consumer demand. No. So if we continue to put the price up too high, we're going to lose that consumer demand, and it's very difficult to get back.
Yeah. It's part of the cycle, isn't it? Is the cycle still functioning in cattle, Chris?
It is to an extent, but if we take realization and we look at those charts from 1975 to present on the herd size, it has consecutively gone down. With each time we go through a building, a cycle, it never reaches a previous level.
Right.
So to think at some point in time in the future with increased limitations of production, higher cost of money, higher cost of production, cattle at all-time historical highs, how are we going to increase the desire to want to increase all of this risk? And you or I assume that coming in there. So I think it very unlikely that we ever see an expansion phase that takes us back. Unfortunately, what we do is we are training our consumer out there to either know they're going to have to pay more money for the better beef, or they're going to have to lower their palate taste just a little bit in order for everybody to have a little piece of it. It's sad to say, but we've seen other industries go in like this. The grain industry, pork, poultry, all of it the same, where more and more production comes from fewer and fewer people. And that's what the cattle industry is in exploration of. How many producers does it really take to have this many cattle out there for the demand we have?
Yep. Okay. So you talk about some of the things that cattlemen hate to talk about. And one of those things is putting a product in the meat case that consumers say, I can't afford that. That's too expensive. Another thing that they hate to talk about is beef imports. Mm-hmm. But to maintain consumer desires, wants for beef, Are the imports a necessary evil?
Well, yes, they have to be. One, because we don't raise enough fat meat, enough lean meat here to satisfy our trimmings. So
right.
We literally have to bring in this lean trimmings in order to mix with U.S. fat for the majority of our fast food hamburger service. And it doesn't matter whether that's a major publicly traded company or Jim and John's down the street. It doesn't matter. They're all vying for that same hamburger product out there. And it's getting expensive, too. So that's another thing. And although we can't really tell a great big difference when we're talking about a hamburger that may have some grass-fed components to it versus all grain-fed components to it, it's highly unlikely that we'll be able to ever, from a palate standpoint, taste the difference between the two.
Right.
It's really when we get into our cuts, our
yeah.
roasts, our steaks, something that's going to have a really high end that you prepare by itself.
Right, right. Something where you use the rendered fat for some flavor on a whole muscle meat.
Flavor.
It shows up. It shows up, no question.
Yep.
Okay. When we come back, I want to talk about a couple of things that you've mentioned. The more beef per carcass. How much further can we push that? And then, of course, what are some of the strategies that you want to use to manage the risk?
Let's go to the markets page at ProFarmer.com and check today's closes. For July, hard red winter wheat futures were 7¾ cents higher, but 567.5. July SRW wheat up 13.5 cents to 557.5. May corn futures were 0.75 cents lower, 436. December corn futures closed at 470¾. That's unchanged on the day. May soybean futures 10.5 cents lower, 1187.75. November soybean futures closed at 1180.5. That's down 10.25 cents. July cotton futures up 67 points today to 94.26. On your livestocks, April fat cattle were $1.32 higher at 188.57.5. April feeder futures $2.97.5 higher at 255.10. April lean hog futures a dime lower, 86.82.5. Go to tryprofarmer.com for more.
From powering irrigation engines to warming buildings, propane has always been a part of American farm life. Now, you can be a part of propane's future and save money at the same time. The Propane Farm Incentive Program is a research initiative that provides farmers up to $5,000 towards the purchase of new propane-powered equipment. In exchange, participants share performance data to make tomorrow's ag operations more cost-effective, more efficient, and more environmentally friendly with propane. Getting started is simple. Visit propane.com/farmincentive to see if you're eligible.
To produce higher yields and greater value at harvest, timing is everything. Full Scale from Helena helps soybeans reach their full potential with breakthrough foliar nutrition and reproduction. Full Scale delivers beneficial plant extracts and micronutrients with the added efficiency of ENC formulation technology. It gives your soybeans every opportunity to grow strong returns this season. Contact your local ag retailer or Helena representative to learn more about Full Scale. Always read and follow label instructions and check registration status before use.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors. You're listening to AgriTalk, where the conversation begins. Join us at 855-4-TALK-AG.
Welcome
one,
back to
one hates
AgriTalk.
To one hates to be predictable. That's the thing.
I see that now.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah, the last thing you will ever call me is predictable.
That's right. That's right. See, I had no idea you were going to say that.
Yeah.
You're
yeah.
in the clear. Well
All
done.
Right. Good deal. Good deal. We're in the middle of a conversation with Chris Swift from Swift Trading Company. Chris, the more beef per carcass, is that something that is being encouraged by the cattle finisher, or is it almost being forced on them by the packers?
I think it's a combination of both. I think it's a necessity is what it is,
okay,
more than anything. Not necessarily a desire by one or the other, but a necessity. And all we're really searching for is that weight level where it begins to be non-eye appealing. A ribeye steak on the grocery store shelf that just looks like something that Fred Flintstone would have put out.
Right.
Those things are not going to be very appealing. We don't want to run into instances like the poultry did with woody breast.
Right.
So what we don't know, or I don't believe have achieved a weight, is to where we find where it goes backwards, you know, where all of a sudden we get a gristle formation in there or something that would be non-appealing to the consumer. So I'm not real sure that we've reached that yet with our pure beef herd. And we do believe that with the cross, we should be able to get just a slightly larger carcass even after that. But I think that those couple of things to have to go through will be minor in comparison to once we do reach that level and say, well, you know, beyond this point, it begins to turn backwards, because we saw that 500 pounds ago when our carcasses were, or cattle in general, we were slaughtering them at 1,100 pounds going, oh, wow, we'll never be able to get them bigger. Well, we've now killing everything at 1,400 pounds plus and going, well, there's not much limitation here. And when the packing houses went through the 2020-21 time frame where they had very limited amounts of time to do things, they expanded. They raised the chains on a lot of the slaughter plants to allow for the heavier carcass. The industry is amazingly efficient at foreseeing the future. And by the time you or I see it, it's already been in process for months before.
Yep.
Because there's just so many smarter people that can see that far out in the future that you and I probably can't.
Yeah. Great point. The one thing that I keep watching for is, you know, the cattle breaking down in the feedlot and not being able to walk on a truck.
Sure.
To get in that trailer and get to slaughter. And, you know, I'm watching for it. I've got some cattle feeders that have told me they'll let me know if they see it starting to happen. And I haven't heard any of that. The cattle can handle it. It's amazing to me.
It sure seems that way. And I have heard the same thing. That is not anything out of the ordinary. I do know it does create health issues, just like anything. When we're obese, it creates issues. But as far as them just keeling over right there, doesn't seem to be an impact at all.
That's right. Okay. Okay. Let's move on to managing the risk for cattle feeders. Do we start with the feeder? Let's start with the feeder cattle on this. Is it more important for the cow-calf guy to cover downside risk, or is it should the feed yards be looking at getting some coverage on even higher prices?
Well, I think it is as simple as going back to what I stated earlier, living with the consequences of your marketing actions. That's what we all have to live with. So to take the calves on and say, do I need to hedge those calves right there? Before you ever do a thing, you can put pencil to paper. You can see whatever premiums that the futures markets offer you, and you can write down option strategies, just an outright put. You can write all of these marketing factors down before you ever put the first dime or make the first phone call to that, and see which one, if the consequences go this way, which one can you live with the most? Did I spend enough money on the put option? Did I not buy a put option at all? Could I have sold calls to reduce the premium on there, transferring my risk, assuming it in another manner? Now all I'm doing is shifting the risk from one place to another. All of those factors can be addressed before you ever open an account, ever put the first penny onto a position, and I highly recommend you do those things, and then that way you'll be able to see, well, I can't live with those kinds of losses. I know I can't meet those kinds of margin requirements to it. Those things are all capable of finding out before you ever put the first position on. That's what we suggest. Tell your broker, this is what I need, and then have him go through multiple different scenarios, because this is not a clean cut and dry ordeal. This is a moving target, and we want to have some leeway in that. So even if we choose option strategies that might solidify a window of opportunity, it could create other risks outside of the window. So we all have to be aware of those. And clearly, you mentioned it before, how much that load of cattle cost. Think about that. Think about the money that you are fixing to have to invest in any kind of hedging program, and just tell yourself, wow, this is one of the most capital intensive businesses to produce a pound of beef as there ever is in the world right now. Yeah. It's phenomenal. And although everything looks like it should go straight up, I'm looking at corn prices cheap and cattle prices high, and we like to buy things when they're cheap, and we like to sell things when they're high.
Right. Absolutely. Chris, we've got a caller. CR from Missouri is on the line. How you doing, CR?
I'm just fine, sir. How you guys doing today?
We're doing real fine, real fine. What's on your mind?
I've got a quick question. I've been buying a 2-inch stick ribeye for 40 years. And it used to be they weigh about a pound. Now they're about 2 pounds. These carcass weights are getting so darn big. What can we do about that? Am I going to just have to eat part of it and take part of it home with me?
Yeah, you know, that's a big problem, having too much ribeye. I think the increased size of that ribeye is here to stay, isn't it, Chris?
I would believe so. Again, we go back to the, I don't think you'll ever see the beef cow herd expand to a previous level. Clearly not the one that we saw in the 16-17 time frame. But even if we just status quo, stay right where we are, then you might see some evening out of it. But there is some way that I think that you'll be able to recut some of that product to give it more of an eye appeal. I know exactly what your caller is looking at on there, and it does have, again, that Fred Flintstone type ordeal where it just covers the entire grill. And that's not very eye appealing when you want to put it on an individual plate with a baked potato and a small little side salad there. So there's going to be some work done. This is more likely than not that testing ground where we try to find those things. We find where the consumer out there is asking questions, and we go back to the drawing board trying to answer those questions.
Yeah.
Got one more question.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay. All these beef dairy cross cattle, there's a lot of big 1,800-1,900 pound Holstein cows. So these beef cross calves, they're going to be bigger than the ones we got now, I think.
They are working on...
I think it's very possible.
It's possible, CR, for sure. But they're working on the genetics on the beef side of things to moderate that carcass size of that finished product. It's almost the opposite of what we're doing in beef. You know, it's been, let's make that carcass bigger, bigger, bigger on the beef genetics for dairy. They're working to moderate that carcass size over time. So it's something that's got everybody's attention. You're bringing up awesome points, CR. I mean, awesome.
Gentlemen, thank you for your time.
Excellent. Thank you, sir. CR from Missouri. Good stuff there from CR. And things that, like you said, Chris, from a consumer's perspective, things that we definitely need to monitor. What about the LRP, Chris? Are you using or suggesting LRP for risk management?
We personally do not sell that here in our office. I've never had anything bad to say about it whatsoever, because no different than everything else in the world, we all have alternatives. And we try to choose the things, the alternatives that meet with our protection needs. So we've got hundreds of different insurance companies out there, and some we know are fly by night, and we probably wouldn't want to have insurance through them, and others we know are very sound. They've been here for years and years. So I think that's kind of the way you look at it as an individual. Some individuals will be able to use the LRP on very small herds. They also like the benefit of some of the government subsidy that is a part of that.
Sure.
Others like the freedom and the movement of futures and options.
Yep.
They can curtail whatever risks they need to, and they have the freedom to be able to move in and out of those as market action determines such.
Yep. Chris, and you know, it gets back to what you were talking about before we got CR on here. have the conversation with your Chris Swift. Talk through what it is that you need to accomplish in your risk management plans, and talk about the different strategies that are available to you to accomplish what you need to do. Chris, I always enjoy our conversations.
Building those
man.
Relationships
Thank
today.
Yeah,
absolutely, Chip. Have a great weekend, sir.
You too. All right, that's Chris Swift, Swift Trading Company. It's Monday. Monday afternoon. That means it's time for a conversation with Kerry Artak next.
To produce higher yields and greater value at harvest, timing is everything. Full Scale from Helena helps soybeans reach their full potential with breakthrough foliar nutrition and reproduction. Full Scale delivers beneficial plant extracts and micronutrients with the added efficiency of ENC formulation technology. It gives your soybeans every opportunity to grow strong returns this season. Contact your local ag retailer or Helena representative to learn more about Full Scale. Always read and follow label instructions and check registration status before use.
From powering irrigation engines to warming buildings, propane has always been a part of American farm life. Now, you can be a part of propane's future and save money at the same time. The Propane Farm Incentive Program is a research initiative that provides farmers up to $5,000 towards the purchase of new propane-powered equipment. In exchange, participants share performance data to make tomorrow's ag operations more cost-effective, more efficient, and more environmentally friendly with propane. Getting started is simple. Visit propane.com/farmincentive to see if you're eligible.
On your favorite radio station or your preferred digital device, AgriTalk is live every weekday.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm your host, Chip Flory. Glad that you are with us. Davis is here as well. Great conversation with Chris.
Yeah.
Holy smokes. Now is not a time to be passive in your risk management. Have that conversation. Make sure that you understand all the strategies, all the options, all the risk management plans that are available to you that will allow you to manage the risks that you're facing in this cattle market right now. Because, boy, it is significant, no doubt.
Yeah.
No doubt. Yep. All right. It is Monday afternoon, time for a conversation with Kerry Artak, Artak Advisory. How you doing, Kerry?
Doing great, Chip. Thanks for having me again.
You bet. Glad that you're here, buddy. Don't forget, you can get a two-week free trial of the Artak Advisory service. Just go to artakadvisory.com, A-R-T-A-C, advisory.com, and get signed up for that. All right, Kerry, kick us off. May soybeans.
May soybeans. Well, we had a big sell signal in early January, a 3 to 5 month sell signal when we closed below a 3-year channel bottom for the first time. That is now at 1275, well above the market. We closed today 1187.75 May contract. Now, we fell, I'd say we reached, I don't know the exact number, but about 80% of the way down there. The February low was 1128.5. We've been expecting around 1090 as a met objective. And following that February low, we've been in this sort of counter trend rally that can exhaust itself at 1221.75 this week. That is our ceiling really through the balance of May contract life. Last week we got to 1217.5. We backed off. 1221.75 is our pivot point really into May expiration, below which we can continue south to 1147 even over the next 2 to 3 weeks, and perhaps to 1089 even by May expiration. Although I don't see that 1089 even as a May target. I think it's more of a July contract target, actually, as we roll from May to July. I just don't think there's enough time left. Okay. But if we were to close above 1221.75 this week, May soybeans, that should elicit a broader market, just a continued recovery back up to 1275 even within about 3 to 5 weeks. 1275 even up to about 1295 even is a big resistance area for the May contract, able to contain buying into its expiration. But a bottom line, 1221.75 is our pivot point through the rest of the May contract, below which selling pressures can continue to build, above which we should see continued recovery to 1275 even. On to June live cattle. June live cattle has been in a buy signal for the last couple of months, expecting the mid 190s, and that remains in effect above 180.10. So the June contract closed today at 185.40. I don't expect to see 180.10 this week, but we might see it over the next couple of weeks. And if so, it can contain selling through April into May, and above which bullish momentum remains intact off that December low in the low 160s. I do think the 194.92 level, an objective we've had for a couple of months, remains a 2 to 3 month likelihood above 180.10. We can close, say, this week above 187.10, and we might. That should set off a more accelerated upward dynamic. I would then expect 194.92 by the end of April if we can close this week above 187.10. 194.92 is a former one-year channel bottom on the weekly chart that can contain seasonal buying pressures when tested, which is to say, if we test it over the next month or two into summer activity. Now, for the downside, if we close below 180.10 this week, that does neutralize the buy signal anticipating 194.92 over the next few months. And with that, I would expect over the next 1 to 2 months, bearish retracement back down in the low 170s, 172 even, then considered a 1 to 2 month target where the June contract could bottom out into its expiration and perhaps the broader live cattle market well into summer activity. And finally, May cotton, wild ride it's been for the last few months. The question is, ups, are we going to continue up or are we going to fall away? And the answer to that is we're in this tight range. We closed today 94.57. 95.94 has been my upward pivot point now for the last couple of months. And while we have pushed through it on an intra-week basis, we have yet to close above it at the end of any week. So if we close Friday above 95.94 May cotton, I see that as a 3 to 5 month buy signal. We could actually get up there sooner to 113 even to 115 even. That would be a significant rally that I think would play out with a weekly settlement above 95.94. Now, until then, this market is inclined to continue south, but we just don't have a sell signal yet. That would come with a settlement this week below 93.58. So both of those levels, 93.58 and 95.94, can contain weekly activity. But if we close outside of them, that is our directional pivot point in the respective direction. So okay, closing below 93.58, there's very little doubt in my mind that this market is inclined to continue south to 87.50 within 2 to 3 weeks. And 80 even, I think, would be in reach within about 3 to 5 months of closing below 93.58. 80 even well-equipped to contain selling through the rest of the year if tested. And that pretty much rounds it out, Chip.
Okay. All right. Good stuff, Gary. Thank you so much, buddy. We'll talk to you next week.
Thank you, sir. You have a great day.
You too. You too. Gary Artak, Artak Advisory. Okay.
Yeah.
You know, that 195 range, but support at 180 in the June cattle.
Yeah.
And then resistance up there around that 195. You know, you got to ask yourself, are we close enough to the upside potential of that market, that now is the time you got to get some of that downside risk protection in place.
Yeah.
So look awfully hard at that. Look awfully hard at it. National Weather Service 6 to 10 day outlook for March 24th through the 28th. This is the 6 to 10 day. Yeah. Wow. Below normal temperatures, Wisconsin, western Illinois, most of Missouri, and parts to the west. Above normal temperatures expected eastern Illinois, Michigan, Indiana, Ohio. So areas basically east of the Mississippi River are looking at above normal temperatures. Above normal precipitation is expected across most of the country. Some of the highest odds of above normal precip right in the middle of the country. The 8 to 14 day, real quick, below normal temperatures, push a little bit further into the east, includes Indiana. Above normal precipitation expected again across most of the country, March 26th through April 1. Hey, thank you so much for listening today. Tomorrow morning, Mitchell Hora from Continuum Ag, and we're going to talk succession planning here on AgriTalk.